Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in 2 Samuel chapter 19, the last part of the chapter, verses 16 through 43. In this passage, we will see David pardoning his enemies at Gilgal following his victory in the civil war with Absalom. Our context is this: in the first 15 verses of chapter 19, we see Joab rebuking David because he's sitting there crying like a baby for his defeated and dead son Absalom, instead of being a king and doing what kings need to do after a civil war. So David gets up from his grief. The first thing he does is he goes to get Judah back on his side. He said, how come you don't want me anymore? Here's Amasa, your general. I'll put him in charge of the army instead of my general Joab. And so now David is starting to act like a king again, and we'll see that here as he pardons his enemies after the civil war. We start now in 2 Samuel 19, verses 16 and 17. Then Shimei, the son of Gera, the Benjamite, who was from Bahurim, hurried and came down with the men of Judah to meet King David. There were 1,000 men of Benjamin with him, with Ziba the servant of the house of Saul and his 15 sons and his 20 servants with him, and they rushed to the Jordan before the king. Now Shimei and Ziba are two people who were not nice. Shimei cursed David on the way out from Jerusalem at the start of the war, and Ziba tried to hoodoo David by lying to him. We'll see that as we go. Let's start with Shimei. He's from Bahurim, which is that little place right beyond the summit of the Mount of Olives on the east side of the Mount of Olives, where David started out, where he fled to originally as he left Jerusalem when Absalom was threatening to take over the city, when did take over the city. Now we see Shimei cursing David on that lonely, sorrowful trek up the Mount of Olives in 2 Samuel 16, verse 5. When King David came to Bahurim, behold, there came out from there a man of the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera. He came out cursing continually as he came. Now notice he's from the house of Saul, as is Ziba. These people are not as loyal to David, because David was from Judah and Saul was from Benjamin, and there was just recently a civil war, and so I'm sure there were still divisions in the kingdom. Well, Shimei comes down to Gilgal, where the reconciliation between Judah and David is taking place as David comes back west across the Jordan River. Gilgal is right down there near the northern tip of the Dead Sea, right there as you cross the Jordan River. And Shimei went running down there. He figured he better ask forgiveness as quick as possible. And what better time to do it is when the men of Judah and David are having a great reconciliation. Why not throw in some Benjamites in the reconciliation? So he goes down there. Shimei does. Now, when I say he goes down there, he didn't actually go to Gilgal, because the reconciliation of Shimei took place right on the east side of the Jordan River before David got to Gilgal on the west side. Now he brings with him 1,000 men. This is not a small contingent. And in that contingent of 1,000 men was Ziba. Now if these 1,000 men were tenants of Shimei, it's one thing, but Adam Clark suggests that they were actually soldiers. Now if that were the case, that shows that Shimei was a very powerful chieftain. He's just not an ordinary guy throwing stones on David and cursing David as David retreats. He brought his 15 sons with him, and his 20 servants, and his 1,000 soldiers or men. All of this was to give a big impression to David. Please pardon me, but if you don't pardon me, you're going to have a whole bunch of enemies on your hand. I think that was probably pretty clever on Shimei's part. Now Ziba was one of these Benjamites who came with Shimei. Now Ziba was the man who had been appointed by David as a steward of Mephibosheth's property, Mephibosheth being Saul's grandson. Saul had Jonathan, David's good friend, and Jonathan had Mephibosheth, and David decided, because of his covenant with Jonathan, to take care of Mephibosheth. And since Mephibosheth was lame in his feet, couldn't very well handle farming duties, so in 2 Samuel 9:10, we see David granting Ziba the stewardship of Mephibosheth's land. Quote, or 2 Samuel 9:10, "You and your sons and your servants shall cultivate the land for him. And you shall bring in the produce, so that your master's grandson," that's Mephibosheth, "may have food. Nevertheless, Mephibosheth, your master," that's referring to Saul, "your master's grandson, Mephibosheth, Saul's grandson, shall eat at my table regularly." Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. Those are the same 15 sons and 20 servants that were just mentioned here in 2 Samuel 19, verse 17, where we are now. Now, Ziba, as David was fleeing Jerusalem, climbing up the Mount of Olives, Ziba, or maybe was it Bahurim, I don't remember, but on that trek outside of Jerusalem, Ziba had slandered Mephibosheth to David in order to get Mephibosheth's property. We read what Ziba said in 2 Samuel 16:3. Where is your master's grandson? That's where is Saul's grandson Mephibosheth? David asked. Why? He's staying in Jerusalem, Ziba replied to David. For he said, today the house of Israel will restore my grandfather's kingdom to me. So Ziba lied about Mephibosheth, said Mephibosheth was all excited because Absalom's rebellion was somehow going to get his kingdom back in the house of Saul. An absolute ball-faced lie. Well, Ziba knew that David was about to get undeceived about that lie when he started questioning Mephibosheth, which we'll see in just a minute, and then he's going to know he's going to be in a world of trouble. So he tried to make a quick peace with David here at Gilgal. We go now to 2 Samuel 19, verses 18 through 20. Then they kept crossing the ford, that's the people of David. They kept crossing the ford to bring over the king's household and to do what was good in his sight. In other words, to obey David. And Shimei, the son of Gera, fell down before the king as he was about to cross the Jordan. So he said to the king, let not my lord consider me guilty, nor remember what your servant did wrong on the day when my lord the king came out from Jerusalem, so that the king would take it to heart. For your servant knows that I have sinned. Therefore, behold, I have come today, the first of all the house of Joseph, to go down to meet my lord the king. Well, such a mea culpa. One wonders how sincere this confession is as he tries to save his neck. Why does Ziba say that he is the first of all the house of Joseph to go down to meet the king? It sounds like the tribe of Judah is already there. Perhaps not. If you take Joseph to refer to all Israel, including Judah, well then, he really was quick to get down to see David, but I suspect that what he means is all the tribes of Israel except for Judah, because the point of going to Gilgal was to meet Judah. And so he ran down there before all the rest of the northern 10 tribes could get there. By the way, in previous audios, I said the northern 11 tribes. It's actually 10 tribes, and it's complicated. Numbering the tribes of Israel ought to have a separate PhD allocated to it, a PhD in tribology. We'll talk about that at the very end of this audio. But the house of Joseph here is probably the other tribes beside Judah, let's put it that way. And Ziba got down there real quickly. 2 Samuel 19, verses 21 through 23. But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, said, should not Shimei be put to death for this, because he cursed the Lord's anointed? David then said, what have I to do with you, O sons of Zeruiah, that you should this day be an adversary to me? Should any man be put to death in Israel today? For do I not know that I am king over Israel today? The king said to Shimei, you shall not die. Thus the king swore to him. Now who is this Abishai? He's the same Abishai who would have taken off Shimei's head if David had let him. In 2 Samuel 16:9, we read this. This again is when David is retreating up the Mount of Olives, and Shimei had thrown rocks at David and cursed him, said he was a murderer. Then Abishai the son of Zeruiah said to the king, why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go over now and cut off his head. So Abishai's a hothead. He's the brother of Joab. Joab is David's commander. David had a sister named Zeruiah. Joab was the son of Zeruiah. Abishai was the son of Zeruiah. And Asahel was also the son of Zeruiah, but he'd been killed a long time ago at the very end of the civil war with Saul by Abner, Saul's general. So when David says, what do I have to do with you, O sons of Zeruiah? He's not only griping about Abishai's attitude towards Shimei, he's also griping about Joab's attitude because he says, O sons of Zeruiah. Either that, or he's just throwing Joab in there for Joab's previous activities that ticked David off, and so he's putting Joab and Abishai in that one category of sons of Zeruiah that he doesn't want to have anything to do with. Not really clear, but either way, David doesn't like these two guys. A little civilian-military conflict. Now, Abishai mentions the cursing of David. I haven't mentioned that yet, so let's go back. I haven't read it to you yet, so let's go back here to 2 Samuel 16, verses 5 through 8. When King David got to Bahurim, a man belonging to the family of the house of Saul was just coming out. It is Bahurim. It wasn't on the way. It was at Bahurim where the cursing took place. This man's name was Shimei, son of Gera, and he was yelling curses as he approached. He threw stones at David and all the royal servants, the people and the warriors on David's right and left. Shimei said as he cursed, get out, you worthless murderer! The Lord has paid you back for all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose place you became king, and the Lord has handed the kingdom over to your son Absalom. Look, you are in trouble because you're a murderer. Now Shimei's cursing was only half right. David was a murderer. He had killed Uriah the Hittite, but he hadn't killed anybody in Saul's house. In fact, he spared Saul's life twice down there in the wilderness near Hebron and in Gedi and Hakilah. Now notice that Abishai says that Shimei has cursed the Lord's anointed. That would refer to David because he's an anointed king. Now notice that Abishai takes this offense of Shimei out of the realm of the personal and makes it an offense against God. God anointed, the Lord's anointed. God has anointed David, and Shimei cursed God's anointed. So now Shimei, what he had done was an offense against God, as well as the state, as well as David personally. So it was a horrible offense that David's getting ready to pardon here, and I think it's sort of understandable that Abishai takes objection to it. Now in verse 22, David says, I am king. Why would he say that? For do I not know that I am king over Israel today? What he means is, hey, I can pardon who I want to pardon. I'm king. And my job right now is to stop the civil war. And I need to show some mercy, so Abishai, please cool it. As it turns out, and we'll see in the next chapter, or at the end of this chapter, the civil war is not over yet. People are still upset with David, and he's trying to show mercy. So he says to Shimei, you shall not die, and then he swears to him, you shall not die, in verse 23. So David kept his promise not to kill Shimei, but on his deathbed, David instructed his son Solomon to take Shimei out. He didn't forget Shimei. He forgave him as a matter of politics, but he was still pretty upset by what Shimei did. We read on David's deathbed, as he's talking to Solomon, his successor, and his son, David says in 1 Kings 2:8-9, Behold, there is with you Shimei, the son of Gera, the Benjamite of Bahurim. Now it was he who cursed me with a violent curse on the day I went to Mahanaim. But when he came down to me at the Jordan, I swore to him by the Lord, saying, I will not put you to death with the sword. Now therefore, do not let him go unpunished, for you are a wise man, and you will know what you ought to do to him, and you will bring his gray hair down to Sheol with blood. In other words, David said, I promised I wouldn't kill him, and I didn't, but I didn't say anything about my son, so you go take him out. That just shows that civil animosities from civil wars last forever, even after political peace. We go now to 2 Samuel 19:24. Then Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king. He's actually the grandson of Saul. And he had neither cared for his feet, nor trimmed his mustache, nor washed his clothes, from the day the king departed until the day the king came home in peace. Now this is son of Saul, because it went Saul is the grandfather, Jonathan is the son, and Mephibosheth is the son of Jonathan. Why does the NASB call him the son of Saul? Because that's just the way they translate things, because son can often mean grandson. The Holman Christian Study Bible does it so that you can understand, translates it as grandson. A good reason why you shouldn't use the NASB, and as I have used entirely too much. Use something like the ESV or the Holman Christian Study Bible, and you save yourself a lot of interpretive difficulties. Now, why had Mephibosheth not cared for his feet, and trimmed his mustache, and washed his clothes? Why didn't he take care of his personal hygiene? Well, the NIV Study Bible says that doing this was a tangible way to express his loyalty for David. It's kind of like a fast, except it's worse than a fast. You show your so miserable by what happened to David. Look at me, David. Ever since you've been run out of the kingdom, I haven't taken a bath yet. I haven't cut my mustache. I've been so sorry about what happened to you. David, of course, has been lied to by Ziba. He thinks that Mephibosheth is a traitor, so he's got to deal with this. We go to 2 Samuel 19:25-26. It was when he, that's Mephibosheth, came from Jerusalem to meet the king, that the king, that's David, said to Mephibosheth, why did you not go with me, Mephibosheth? In other words, when I'm running from Absalom, heading up the Mount of Olives, going to Bahurim, on the other side of the Mount of Olives, how come you didn't go with me? Verse 26, so he, Mephibosheth, answered, O my lord the king, my servant deceived me. For your servant said, my servant, he's talking about Ziba, for your servant, in other words, I, Mephibosheth, said to Ziba, I will saddle a donkey for myself that I may ride on it and go with the king. because your servant is lame. In other words, he's saying, I'll have to ride a donkey to go with the king because I can't walk, but I would have gotten that donkey ready to go. And the implication here is Ziba didn't let him do it. Ziba lied. Now, where is Mephibosheth meeting the king? Probably at Gilgal here, because that's where the ceremonial reception of David is taking place by the elders of Judah. And David asks, why did you go with me, Mephibosheth? Now, this is a reasonable question. David is not sure of Mephibosheth's loyalty because of Ziba's lie that was told to him early. Was David reasonable in his doubt? I think he was. But Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown disagrees. They say that, quote, the reception given to Mephibosheth was less creditable to David. The sincerity of that prince's grief for the misfortunes of the king cannot be doubted. Well, hindsight's 20/20. If you were there, Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown, you wouldn't have had just a little bit of suspicion. It was Ziba's slander that raised a doubt in David's mind. Let me read that. This is again on the retreat to Bahurim out of Jerusalem. 2 Samuel 16:3. Then the king, David, said, and where is your master's son? Where is your master Saul's grandson? David asked Ziba, and Ziba said to the king, behold, he is staying in Jerusalem, for he said, today the house of Israel will restore the kingdom of my father to me. A bald-faced lie, as I've said before. Mephibosheth never thought that Absalom's rebellion, if it were successful, would put him back on the throne. He had no interest in ruling. And besides, he's lame in his feet. Who's going to make a lame man king of Israel? That's nonsense. But people do nonsensical things, and Ziba convinced David that Mephibosheth was doing something nonsensical, claiming that he was going to take over the kingdom. Now, I mentioned that Mephibosheth would have saddled a donkey for himself and ridden out of Jerusalem to be with King David. But what happened was Ziba, instead of saddling Mephibosheth's donkey, took Mephibosheth's donkey plus another one and had fled, leaving Mephibosheth in Jerusalem. We read in 2 Samuel 16:1, now when David had passed a little beyond the summit of the Mount of Olives, behold, Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, met him with a couple of saddled donkeys. The implication there is that one of those donkeys should have been for Mephibosheth. It's a reasonable assumption, I think. Remember, and why was Mephibosheth lame in his feet? Well, if you recall back in 2 Samuel 4:4, now Jonathan, Saul's son, had a son crippled in his feet. He was 5 years old when the report of Saul and Jonathan came from Jezreel. That Jezreel is where? Right there, right west of the Mount of Gilboa, where the terrible defeat of Saul happened, and Saul got killed and Jonathan got killed. And for some reason, Jonathan had taken Mephibosheth to the battle. He's 5 years old. After Jonathan gets killed, his nurse takes Mephibosheth and flees, and it happened that in her hurry to flee, he fell and became lame, and his name was Mephibosheth. We go down to 2 Samuel 19:27-28. Moreover, Mephibosheth continues, he, Ziba, has slandered your servant to my lord the king, but my lord the king is like the angel of God. Therefore do what is good in your sight. For all my father's household was nothing but dead men before my lord the king. Yet you set your servant among those who ate at your own table. What right do I have yet that I should complain any more to the king? Now, I've already mentioned that slander in 2 Samuel 16:3, where Ziba told David that Mephibosheth was claiming that Absalom's rebellion, if successful, was going to put Mephibosheth back on the throne, which, of course, is absurd. So Mephibosheth says, look, I was slandered, that's okay. You do whatever's good in your sight. Condemn me or acquit me. It's up to you. He says, but then he reminds David. He says, listen, I was nothing. My father's household, the Benjamites, Saul, Jonathan, they were nothing but dead men before my lord the king. They were dead, literally. They got killed two of the most prominent members of that household were killed at Gilboa. And the rest of them might as well have been dead. And so they were nothing but dead men before my lord the king. In fact, usually when you have a civil war and David's taking back over the kingdom, usually he kills the members of the preceding administration. That's usually what happens to the household of defeated kings, like Saul was defeated. But David spared him, let him eat at his own table. 2 Samuel 9:7, don't be afraid, David said to Mephibosheth, since I intend to show you kindness because of your father Jonathan, I will restore to you all your grandfather Saul's fields, and you will always eat meals at my table. And so Mephibosheth refers back to that, saying, David, please have mercy on me. I was slandered. Remember my past. You showed me favor. You let me eat at your table. 2 Samuel 19:29-30. The king said to Mephibosheth, "Why keep on speaking about these matters of yours? I hereby declare you and Ziba are to divide the land." Mephibosheth said to the king, "Instead, since my lord the king has come to his palace safely, let Ziba take it all." Well, this new proclamation of David, "You and Ziba are going to divide the land, Mephibosheth," that revoked David's last grant to Ziba, which was, "Ziba gets it all," 2 Samuel 16:4. So the king said to Ziba, "Behold, all that belongs to Mephibosheth is yours." This is when David thinks that Mephibosheth is being a traitor. Now, David now reestablishes his first decree with concerning Ziba and Mephibosheth, that Ziba would take half the land. Now, what does that mean? It could mean Ziba would have half the profit of the land for tilling it. The other half of the profits would go to Mephibosheth. I think that was the status quo ante, which was reestablished with no punishment for Ziba. Now, this established a hardship for Mephibosheth because now he's got a tenant, Ziba, who's farming his land, but he knows that Ziba is a lying skank who tried to betray him, which would have gotten Mephibosheth killed if his betrayal had been successful. But now David puts Ziba back in charge of half the produce. It seems to me that David really should have said, "Ziba, get out of town. You lied. You're not getting any proceeds from Mephibosheth's land." Now, I said that the profits were divided. It could be that Ziba owned half the land and fee simple and that Mephibosheth owned the other half. Well, if that's the case, Mephibosheth got screwed even worse. That would be because Mephibosheth would only have half his land now instead of all of his land. So although David didn't kill Mephibosheth, it seems to me he could have done better by him. Well, let's look at some reasons why David didn't punish Ziba for deceiving David about Mephibosheth. Here's some possible reasons. One, David was showing mercy to everyone now. If he had have punished Ziba badly, remember, Ziba's got 1,000 soldiers with him, plus his sons and his servants. If David had not given Ziba back his half interest in Mephibosheth's land, there could have been another rebellion instigated by Ziba. So that makes a lot of sense. That's John Gill's idea. David may have feared Ziba because Ziba apparently was a man of considerable importance, and so he had to placate him. And in fact, Ziba had already buttered David up on the flight from Jerusalem up the Mount of Olives. 2 Samuel 19:17 says this, "There were 1,000 men of Benjamin with him, with Ziba the servant of the house of Saul, and his 15 sons and his 20 servants with him. And they rushed to the Jordan before the king," and the passage goes on to talk about all the food that Ziba had given him. Let's read in 2 Samuel 16:2. The passage says, "Ziba tells David the donkeys are for the king's household to ride." He gave him some donkeys, 2 donkeys to ride, "and the bread and summer fruit for the young men to eat, and the wine for whoever is faint in the wilderness to drink." So Ziba gave David bread and fruit and wine, and when you're hungry and on the march in exile, that's good stuff. So Ziba had buttered his bread wisely. Smart guy, this Ziba. So he comes through the rebellion all right, back to where he was before without losing his head. We go now to 2 Samuel 19, verses 31 through 33. "Now Barzillai the Gileadite had come down from Rogalim, and he went on to the Jordan with the king to escort him over the Jordan. Now Barzillai was very old, being 80 years old, and he had sustained the king while he stayed at Mahanaim, for he was a very great man. The king said to Barzillai, 'You cross over with me, and I will sustain you in Jerusalem with me.'" Now, Barzillai came from Rogalim. Rogalim is, according to BibleAtlas.org, right on top of Mahanaim, right there, so close to Mahanaim you can't even distinguish Rogalim from Mahanaim. Of course, Mahanaim was on the Jabbok River, on the east side of the Jordan, right across the Jordan River on the east side. Famous place, of course, where Jacob wrestled with the angel of Jehovah with Jesus, right in that area. Now, Barzillai was one of the three people that helped David support himself, that supported David when David had fled from Bahurim to Mahanaim. One of them was Shobai, the son of Nahash. The other was Machir, the son of Amiel. And Barzillai was the other guy, rich guy. David wants to reward him. "Come to Jerusalem. I'll put you on the payroll." We go to 2 Samuel 19, verses 34 through 38. "But Barzillai said to the king, 'How long have I yet to live that I should go up with the king to Jerusalem? I am now 80 years old. Can I distinguish between good and bad? Or can your servant taste what I eat or what I drink? Or can I hear any more the voice of singing men and women? Why then should your servant be an added burden to my lord the king? Your servant would merely cross over the Jordan with the king. Why should the king compensate me with this reward? Please let your servant return that I may die in my own city near the grave of my father and my mother. However, here is your servant Kimham. Let him cross over with my lord the king and do for him what is good in your sight. The king answered, Kimham shall cross over with me, and I will do for him what is good in your sight, and whatever you require of me, I will do for you. Now in verse 34, Barzillai says to the king, I don't want to go to Jerusalem. Now, this discussion with Barzillai occurred on the east of the Jordan somewhere as David is getting ready to cross over the Jordan to Gilgal to meet the tribal leaders of Judah. So we're still on the east side of the Jordan. And Barzillai says, I really don't want to go up to Jerusalem. Now that up means up. It's a steep climb from the Jordan to the Jerusalem. I remember being on a tour bus. Tour bus never got over 40 miles an hour, and it was in low gear trying to handle that steep incline. And Barzillai is 80 years old. He's got to climb up a steep hill to get to Jerusalem. And then he says in verse 35, can I distinguish between good and bad? In other words, do I know what good advice is, what bad advice is? What good is it going to be for me to go to Jerusalem to advise you as one of your counselors? I don't know what's good. I don't know what's bad. As far as political advice, I can't even taste what I eat or drink. That's what happens when you get old. You can't taste things. I can't hear anymore. I can't hear the voice of singing men and women. He's just basically saying I'm old and I'm going to be a burden. David, you're going to have to take care of me. I'm not going to be able to help you. Now, I think that's perfectly reasonable on the part of Barzillai the Gileadite. He says in verse 36, David, why should you compensate me by sustaining me in Jerusalem? The compensation, of course, is for all the support that Barzillai had given to David at Mahanaim, which was David's headquarters at the end of the Civil War. So Barzillai says, let me go back. Let me die in the grave of my father. Old people love to go back to where they grew up. I learned that when I was in China. In fact, I've seen that most people everywhere, not just in China, everywhere, end up dying within 25 miles of their hometown. President Nixon died in the same park. You can throw a rock from the place he was born to the place he died in California. On a tour, I discovered that. I thought that was quite remarkable. Well, that's what Barzillai wants. But he does say, look, here's your servant Kimham. Kimham, I guess is how the British would say it. If I'm here in the South, I'd say Kimham. C-H-I-M-H-A-M. Kimham. That's probably Barzillai's son. And Barzillai says, let him go over. Not me, but let him go over and you can bless him. You want to give me some compensation for what good I've done? Well, bless my son. So in verse 38, the king answered, Kimham shall cross over with me, and I will do for him what is good in your sight. And whatever you require of me, I will do for you. All right, this Kimham, how do we know that he is Barzillai's son, as John Gill asserts? In fact, the Syriac and Arabic versions of the scriptures say that explicitly, that Kimham was Barzillai's son. We see in 1 Kings 2:7, as David is on his deathbed, giving deathbed instructions to his son Solomon, show kindness to the sons of Barzillai, the Gileadite. The sons of Barzillai doesn't mention who the other son is, but Kimham is probably one of them. Let them be among those who eat at your table, for they assisted me when I fled from Absalom, your brother. Now, we nowhere read of what Barzillai asked of David for Barzillai's son. He just says, do whatever you want. Do for him what is good in your sight. Do whatever you want. And the king says, whatever you require of me, I will do. But we don't know what Barzillai asked David to do for Kimham. However, we do know this, kind of interesting. It is probable that David gave a great part of his personal patrimony in Bethlehem to Kimham and to Kimham's heirs. How do we know that? This is what Jameson Foster and Brown speculate. We read in Jeremiah 41:17, as Jeremiah and friends were heading out of the destroyed nation of Israel, destroyed by the Babylonians, they're going down to Egypt, and they went and stayed in Geruth Kimham, proper name of a place, Geruth Kimham, which is beside Bethlehem, in order to proceed into Egypt. So it is deduced from that that David must have given some property to Kimham down there. Kind of interesting. We're in Bible trivia territory, folks. We go down to 2 Samuel 19, verses 39 through 40. All the people crossed over the Jordan, and the king crossed too. So now they've gone to Gilgal. The king then kissed Barzillai and blessed him and returned to his place. I'm assuming that's before the king crossed. Barzillai goes back to Rogalim, which is right on top of Mahanaim there on the river Jabbok. Verse 40, now the king went on to Gilgal, and Kimham went on with him, and all the people of Judah and also half the people of Israel accompanied the king. Now that half the people of Israel does not mean an exact mathematical half. Sometimes the word just means a part. So a half or a part of the people of Israel got there. Now the question arises, why did only a part of Israel come to meet David? Maybe they didn't have enough time to get there. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say that David is very impatient to move on to get to the capital, Jerusalem. However, his haste in going to Jerusalem with only half of non-Judah Israel, only half of the northern 10 tribes, his haste in going to Jerusalem and leaving those 10 tribes out almost provoked another civil war. In fact, we're going to see about Sheba's rebellion in chapter 20 in our next audio. So he might should have just waited. David might should have just said, okay, I'll hang around here until all of Israel gets here. But he didn't. Now the people of Benjamin that did get there was Barzillai. Well, they were on the other side of the Jordan, the east side of the Jordan, but they were reconciled to David, let's put it that way, along with the other half of the people of Israel who were accompanying David from Gilgal to Jerusalem. So now we're going to look at the other half, the aggrieved half, 2 Samuel 19, verses 41 through 43, and we will finish this audio. And behold, all the men of Israel came to the king and said to the king, this is King David, why had our brothers, the men of Judah, stolen you away and brought the king and his household and all David's men with him over the Jordan? Then all the men of Judah answered the men of Israel, because the king is a close relative to us. Why then are you angry about this matter? Have we eaten at all at the king's expense, or has anything been taken for us? But the men of Israel answered the men of Judah and said, we have 10 parts in the king, therefore we also have more claim on David than you. Why then did you treat us with contempt? Was it not our advice first to bring back our king? Yet the words of the men of Judah were harsher than the words of the men of Israel. Now, the men of Israelites were exactly right when they said they were the first to bring back the king. If you recall in the previous chapter, David is complaining to Judah and says, why are you guys behindhand in coming back to me and wanting to reconcile? Why have the northern tribes shown more alacrity in reconciling with me? So the Benjamites were, the northern 10 tribes there, they were right about that. Judah was very slow in coming back to David. They were also right about the 10 parts. That's referring to the 10 northern tribes. They were right that there were more of them than there were of Judah. On the other hand, the tribe of Judah was right in saying that they were a close relative to David. It's understandable that they would go without the other Israelites. And then they say, we haven't taken any of the king's money. We haven't financially profited from this. So what you complaining about? All right, verse 41, the scripture says, and behold, all the men of Israel came to the king. That doesn't mean every last single one. Exhaustively, of course, it means all the leaders of Israel, of the northern 10 tribes, came to have this diplomatic dispute. They put the situation in the worst possible light, the northern leaders do. They say, why have you Judahites stolen David away? Stolen, as in secretly and privately, without us northern 10 tribes knowing anything about it. Well, I'm not sure that's accurate. I don't think they were trying to hide anything. Half of the northern 10 tribes had been there, had gotten there. It wasn't hidden from them. So that's really ridiculous in my opinion. And the people of Judah, the leaders of Judah respond, hey, the king is a close relative of us. It's normal that we would go there first. Well, I don't know about that now. They were late getting there. The northern tribes reconciled with David before the tribes of Judah did. This appeal to relationship that Judah did, that illustrates the perennial problem of tribal societies trying to set up governments based on law. I remember reading about ancient Chinese history. Oh my gosh, they had the worst time. The central government, the emperor, would try to set up law courts. And so a man's son murdered somebody. The local officials tried to bring him to justice. They needed some testimony, and the father says, oh, no. Let's say I'm not a man's son, but a man's father. Let's make it better. A man's father had committed a murder, so the central government authorities go to the son and say, we need you to testify against your father. And in China, the father is everything. That goes all the way back to Kongzi, to Confucius. You can't ask me to testify against my father. That would be immoral. And so that's a typical problem. Of course, in our modern world, we try to say that governments are based on law, not on men. Now, of course, that is sometimes honored in the breach, but that's the idea, much stronger now than it was back then. Now, why were the northern 10 tribes angry? As the tribes of Judah, the leaders of Judah said, why are you angry? Well, that's a good question. Why were they angry? All right, well, let's look at some possible reasons. First of all, David had been extra kind to the men of Judah. David had reached out to Judah and not the northern tribes of Israel, the 10 tribes. We read that in 2 Samuel 19, 9 through 12. After the Civil War, all the people among all the tribes of Israel were arguing, "The king delivered us from the grasp of our enemies, and he rescued us from the grasp of the Philistines, but now he has fled from the land because of Absalom. But Absalom, the man we anointed over us, has died in battle. So why do you say nothing about restoring the king?" In other words, the northern tribes were divided. Some wanted to restore David, some did not. Verse 11, King David sent word to the priests Zadok and Abiathar, "Say to the elders of Judah, why should you be the last to restore the king to his palace?" In other words, David reached out to Judah first before he reached out to all the other northern tribes, and that might have ticked them off. The northern tribes might have ticked them off. Now note, this extra kindness to Judah has come back to bite David, because he's going to end up with another full-scale rebellion by the 10 tribes of Israel, which we'll see in just a minute, or in the next chapter. So anyway, the fact that David had reached out to Judah and not to the northern 10 tribes in order to reconcile would tick off the northern 10 tribes. And when you consider that the men of Judah had started the rebellion, remember Absalom got Judah to rebel against David, David's own people. So the northern tribes might think, well, that's just great. You're showing favor to Judah, and they're the ones that started the rebellion. So why are you giving Judah preferential treatment, David? And another reason, Israel is more numerous than Judah. They have 10 parts to David's one part, to Judah's one part. So why are you showing more favor to the smaller part of the nation, David? And also, David is trying to regain a throne that originally belonged to Benjamin, not Judah, because, of course, Saul was from the tribe of Benjamin. And there's that old Civil War division. The northern tribes are more closely going to be allied with Benjamin than Judah. Benjamin is to the north of Judah. So there were some reasons why the northern 10 tribes might have been upset, and we'll leave the nation in turmoil there as we go on to our next chapter. But before we do, let's look at this phrase, "We have 10 parts in the king." The northern tribes say, "We have 10 parts." Well, actually, it's not easy to see where that 10 comes from. How do we get to 10 tribes? Well, originally there were 12 tribes, but Joseph, the tribe of Joseph, was divided into Ephraim and Manasseh, as I'm sure you know. That gives you 13 tribes. But now you subtract Levi, because they were priests that didn't have any land. So now you're back down to 12 tribes, as Kylan Delitzsch point out. But now you need to subtract Simeon, because their lot was within Judah. They had towns that were scattered all through the tribe of Judah. So now you're down to 11 tribes, as Benson, the commentator, points out. And now, of course, you have to subtract Judah, because they are not allied with the northern tribes, and that gets you to 10 tribes. And I said earlier in this audio, dealing with how many tribes of Israel there are, that issue comes up so many times that I have to count every time I come across it to know how many tribes we're talking about. Ladies and gentlemen, we are now finished with 2 Samuel chapter 19. We're ready to go next audio to 2 Samuel 20 verses 1 through 26. And we will look at Sheba's rebellion that comes out of this dispute here at Gilgal. Hope to see you in our next audio. And I hope you enjoyed this one.